Welcome to The Leading Edge, developing officers for command. I'm Senior Master Sergeant Eugene Crist from your 130th Public Affairs. Now let's get to the content.
All right, good morning, everyone, and welcome to our final of this series, The Leading Edge podcast, developing officers for command. We're extremely fortunate today to have one of our esteemed retirees join us for this last and really the most appropriate way to close out series that's been going on now for a couple of years. Lieutenant Colonel retired Matthew Bethel, goes by Shaggy, is a graduated squadron commander. His resume on the military side is extensive. I could probably spend 5 minutes talking about all the things that he's done, from being a deployed squadron commander to a F-15 Strike Eagle pilot, JTAC, AMLO, and a host of other things. We work together as a team in the operations group here, first as a squadron commander and director of operations, and then as group commander and squadron commander. Personally, I learned a tremendous amount from Matt. It's really a great time in the ops group in terms of how we were working to develop a more robust, comprehensive feedback process for our airmen. I would contend that Colonel Bethel was kind of the foundation of the way that we did that throughout the ops group, in the way that he provided meaningful feedback to his airmen, and in particular the senior NCO Corps, and it was really the bedrock of how strong that portion of the ops group is today. So without further ado, Shaggy, the floor is yours.
All right.
Great to have you here.
Thanks, bro. It's good to be here. Well, thanks for coming down and being willing to be part of this last session. I listened to all of the podcasts prior to today, and there's some really good topics that were covered. I think it's a really awesome opportunity that Colonel Char put together. And you know, so for anyone listening, if it's 6 months, a year, 2 years from now, as you listen through these, there's some great nuggets in there. And I hope you'll go back and listen to them as you go through your career, because there'll be things that'll come up that, you know, maybe didn't seem relevant at the time, but you'll find that they are later. I do want to start though. Last night I was working in the garage and I super glued these two fingers together, but I'll be okay for a while. If you guys don't, if you're not from the ops group, you don't know. When I was in the ops group, it sort of became tradition that I tell a few dad jokes at the beginning of any conversation that I had publicly, so I had to get a couple in there. You know, in the mornings, I have a little routine: get up, coffee, go out the newspaper. And lately, every morning, I keep getting hit by the same bicycle. It's a vicious cycle. It just keeps happening. And then the other day, I was talking to my cousin, Lance, which is a true story. And it dawned on me that, you know, today there aren't that many people named Lance, you know? So it's not that common. And it made me wonder, like, I wonder why, because back in medieval times, people were named Lance a lot, you know? So anyway, there you go. That's obligatory dad jokes. We had to get those out of the way. I do think these sessions have been awesome. They're thinking just through some of the topics, you know, giving feedback. Chief Williams gave that one. Empowering others, from Lieutenant Colonel Hera. The very first one or two that Colonel Chard did himself, just kind of setting the stage. Just some great nuggets in those conversations. The first sergeant's role, the one you guys did where there was just kind of some discussion about like hard decisions and kind of working through some of those scenarios. Just some really good stuff and super helpful. And something I tell my kids this all the time, and I hope one of the main themes that came out, I think, from those is that, hey, every officer is a leader, right? You don't have to wait till you have a position, till you're in a command position or whatever. I hope you're not waiting for that to be a leader. And I think even more, every airman a leader, right? I mean, we want our young airmen to be leading their peers, to be leading their shops, whatever. And so that idea, a couple other concepts that kind of ran throughout the sessions there, it came up a couple times that there's an obligation. That's why Colonel Char is doing this, right? Because there's an obligation as an organization to develop and train the next generation of leaders. And so we're part of that obligation that we have to train and develop others, but also to develop and grow ourselves, right? To take on that obligation to develop and continue to grow throughout our career. The idea of being intent-based leadership, you know, and giving intent rather than, you know, just telling everyone what to do all the time. Just give your intent and let people go. And along with that comes the idea that failure is okay, right? That theme came up a couple times, and I wanted to highlight that. I think that's huge. Failure, we'll talk about it a little bit more here in a minute, but that's a huge part of our culture in the flying world. That debrief culture, someone mentioned that in one of the sessions. That's a huge thing, and that's how we get better, because we expect to come back and talk about, hey, what did we mess up? It doesn't mean you're a failure as a person. It just means there's one area you can get a little better in today for tomorrow and for the next time and continue to grow. And that's huge. As we set that climate, it's huge that we allow, you know, failures to happen, and we don't just go high order on that we allow people to grow from their own mistakes, et cetera. We're going to talk about all that, because that's kind of, and then, oh, we talked the first sergeant, all of those things, all those topics, I just bring them all up again to say they all connect to this, right, to feedback. And so as we kind of wrap up 10 with 11 or 12 sessions here, if we as leaders or just as individuals are not able to receive feedback, we're going to stunt not only our own growth, but the growth of the organization that we're trying to lead. As I like to call it, unlocking your leadership superpower. And I think it's true. If you can figure out how to accept, receive, and process and accept feedback, and then go from there, you really are unlocking a superpower to become the next level leader that you're capable of being. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So there's a couple books I'll mention, and we can get the specifics later, but there's one called Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen wrote that. There's a book called Multipliers by Liz Wiseman. That's a fantastic leadership read that talks about this topic. There's another book called Leadership Transformed by a guy named Dr. Peter Fuda. All great resources, and some of this is a mix of all of that. And then there's a guy named Craig Rochelle. You may have heard of him. He has a podcast on leadership topics, and he discusses feedback. I listened to one from like 2018, a while ago, about this process. So all of those kind of shaped what I'm going to talk about today. So I just wanted to give that credit out. So here we go. We're going to jump into this topic. And this next slide, if you don't learn anything else, here it is. The receiver plays the most important role, right? Because whether feedback is given perfectly or delivered extremely poorly, it's up to you as the receiver to do something with that information, right? So you can have the best boss in the world gives you excellent feedback, and you can choose whether or not you're going to take it or not. You can have a terrible boss who gives you terrible feedback, but there's still probably some nugget in there that you have to decide, am I going to process this information or not? So if you learn nothing else from today, just remember, you as the receiver are the most important role player in the whole feedback process, which, oh, by the way, is ongoing 24/7, you know, all day, every day in your life, both here in your military duty, in your civilian job, at home, et cetera, right? So I just want to foot stomp that up front, as we say, right? You as a receiver, you play the most important role. There's one example, and I think it was the book about the Thanks for the Feedback book. But a friend of one of the authors had twin daughters. They both play softball. They're in high school. They're in the backyard one day, and he was pointing out swing fix that they could try to implement, right? The one daughter's like, oh, that's cool. Let me try. So she picks up the bat, and he's working with her, and she's trying it. She's like, oh, okay. He turns around. The other daughter's over in the corner crying, and he's like, what is wrong? And she's like, why do you think I'm a terrible softball player, right? Same dad. Same exact feedback, two different receivers. You know, it just highlights the idea that how you take the feedback is really the and that's why we're going to talk about it today. So I teach in my church with young adults, you know, 20-somethings, and we just went through some passages in the Gospels, and this is not a spiritual discussion, but I think we're all familiar. In the New Testament, there's Jesus, when he speaks in parables often, right? And one time someone asked him, like, why are you speaking in parables? Why don't you just say what you want to say? And he said, well, because I want whoever's really paying attention to hear. But if someone's not really paying attention, it's they're not going to get the message. And that, you know, that's the exact idea here. How you receive the feedback and whether you choose to grow from it or not is up to you. It's not up, you can't blame somebody else. It's all up to you. So I want to put that out right up front. So this is a picture of breakfast sausage. And I wanted to start with the story because every good pilot discussion starts with a there I was story. But this story does not start with me inverted or doing anything weird like that. This starts with me with my kids in the kitchen. And we're getting ready to we're making this breakfast casserole thing for function the next day. So it's kind of it's a couple of dishes. And so my wife's doing the eggs and my daughter's cutting up vegetables. And so I grab my son, I'm like, hey, help me with the sausage. So my wife had earlier asked me, hey, there's two tubes, please put them in two separate pans. And then, you know, okay, cool. Son comes in, I'm like, hey man, can you help me? Yeah, Dad. So we get the one tube open, put it in the thing, and then I had to go, I think my wife needed help or something, turn around, come back, and Noah has, and my kids, by the way, they gave me permission to tell this story, so just so you know. So I turn around, both tubes of sausage are in one pan, the other pan is just sitting there. And my wife is like, oh, I wanted those in two separate pans. And my son, who's just turned 16, and is, you know, doing all the wonderful 16-year-old things that 16-year-olds do, he's like, well, I didn't know. And I'm like, that's actually true. I didn't tell him. So I was like, hey, babe, it's my fault. I didn't tell him. It's no big deal. We'll just split it. Okay, cool. And then he kind of said something again, like, no one told me, you know? I'm like, okay, all right, no big deal. So we start to cook the sausage. We're just talking. And he's like, Dad, you're doing that wrong. And I'm like, have you ever cooked sausage before in your life? He's like, no. I'm like, okay, all right. So let me cook my sausage, cook your sausage, be all right. So a few minutes later, he sticks his tongs over in my side, and I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, you're doing it wrong. And I'm like, okay. And in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, he messed up the thing earlier, even though I didn't tell him. He should have figured out there's two pots. Obviously, they're going to go in two different pans. Now he's telling me how to cook the sausage. And I think it happened again the third time. And finally, I was like, listen, you come in here, mess up the sausage, then you're going to tell me how to cook sausage. You've never even cooked it in your life. What is wrong with you? Like, well, this is your whole problem. And I kind of went off for a minute. And, you know, right, I got 16 years of being his dad, and I know all his flaws, and that's not his fault. And so I kind of went off for a minute about how he's, you know, doesn't take feedback very well and all this stuff. And so that ends with him leaving the room. So I finished the sausage, and now the kitchen's quiet, you know. And so my daughter's finishing up over here, and she goes, hey, Dad. I'm like, yes. Everything you said's probably true, and he needed to hear that, but I don't think he needed to hear it that way. And maybe not right now. I'm like, okay. I finished my sausage. She said a few other things, and she was being very kind about it. And she at the end, she goes, and you know, I know you want us to, like, you know, come and talk to you about stuff and problems and stuff, but that doesn't help when that happens. And I'm like, you know, okay. So we get done with the thing. I leave the room, and my wife comes to find me, and she's like, you know what your daughter said is right. I'm like, yes, I know. She's like, what are you gonna do about it? I'm like, just give me a minute, you know. So I go back, talk to my son, apologize, go back to my daughter. I'm like, thank you. That was actually, everything you said was correct. And I apologize that, you know. And so we went on, and you know, and my wife says to me, she's like, you know, it's supposed to be a good morning. Like, we're just hanging out as a family doing stuff. And you kind of ruined it, you know? Like, all right. So I go back, talk to them both, and, you know, we go on and we have a good rest of the Saturday. So we're going to come back to that story, but I wanted to throw that out there because we all have people, we all have relationships that are close, and sometimes those things happen. But there's a lot of feedback in that story, both going all over the place, so we'll come back to it, all right? So that's how we're going to start the day. So here's what we're going to talk about, though. Receiving feedback well. This is, I think, your superpower to becoming a good leader. Three things. Do you crave it? Do you process it well? And then do you implement the change that you learned from it? And for our weapons patch friend over here, in the weapons school, they teach kind of have this mantra that as if you're going to go back and be, you know, the expert in tactics in your unit, you need to be humble, approachable, incredible. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. How do you become humble enough to receive to crave it, to desire feedback, approachable enough to let that people come and give it to you, and then credible enough that you make the change and people can see that you're actually implementing the feedback they're giving you. And this can be implemented personally on a personal level or organizationally, right? So if you become a commander and you're leading an organization, there is a process for a 360 degree feedback, right, that you can put out to your people. I hope you, if you ever get a chance to the privilege to command, take advantage of that. Do it at the beginning. Find out where the organization's at, because whether or not, even if you're like, well, that wasn't, whatever's going on, it wasn't my fault, I wasn't in charge, doesn't matter. You're leading the organization now. It's probably a good idea to figure out where we're at and what problems people think need to be addressed. Are you humble enough to accept that at the beginning, right? Do one in the middle, you know, and figure out what you, okay, now it is your problem, right? So are you willing to hear what your problems are? And there's a formal process for that. Today's session's not about that process per se, but just the idea of receiving feedback, whether it's in a group formal session or informally. And you don't have to wait again until you're a commander to do this, right? Do this. I hope you do this every day in the jobs that you're in. So that's what we're going to talk about. So first one here, humble. Do you crave feedback, right? Do you, in your life and in your workspace, are you seeking it out? So one of the topics that we talked about in that came up multiple times in some of those other sessions was the idea of setting a healthy command climate, right? And if I am going to be able to give feedback out in my organization, which I would like to be able to do as the leader of it, have you set the climate where it's acceptable that feedback is given and received well? And then, it's nothing personal, and it's not an attack on you as a person, right? All those things, you set the tone by how you crave that feedback. Are you humble enough to seek it out? So here's another point on that topic, and I'm gonna get I forgot to get it out earlier, but here's this, all right? Feedback cannot be pushed, it must be pulled. Forgot to get my illustration out, so we'll do that here real quick. All right, so we like to talk about a noodle. You can't push a noodle, right? To spaghetti noodle, right? You put it on a plate. If you need to go from this side of the plate to that side of the plate, you can't push it. It's not going to go anywhere, right? Just like this string, you know, you get this out. If I need this to go up here, I can take the bottom end and try and push it up, but nothing's happening, right? But you take this and you pull it, goes right where you need it to go. And it's in a straight line. It's nice and organized. Everybody's happy. Try to push it. Nothing happens. You can't. It doesn't work, right? You get the point. Feedback has to be pulled. It cannot be pushed. Point is, you are the receiver of the feedback. You have to pull it, right? People need to know that you're desiring it and you're pulling it out of whatever situation you're in. People can, they'll try to push it to you, and some of them may do a really good job at it. Some of them may do a really terrible job at it, right? But in the end, again, we said at the beginning, you're the key role here. Are you gonna pull that feedback out of every situation? Are you going to wait for someone to push it to you, and it's probably not going to work anyway? So feedback can't be pushed. It must be pulled. That puts the weight on you. Also, you set the culture, right? The feedback culture starts with you if you're going to lead an organization. Well, even right now, if you're just leading a shop, even if you're not leading anything, you are, right? If you're a lieutenant and you're not, I'm not in charge of anything right now. Yes, you are. You're in charge of the room that you work in, the space that you're in, the shop that you work in, the way that you show up and do your job, the way that you receive feedback, you are leading the way you set your tone. Well, I was just talking with another dad about this yesterday, and talking about teenagers and how significant of a difference it makes. I've watched as my kids have gone through high school, they go to a private school, and the junior and seniors in the school makes a difference every year as the whole student body. It's crazy, but you can see it. And you know, those kids, I think sometimes they don't realize that they're leading, but they are. And sometimes that leadership is good leadership, and sometimes it's not so good leadership. How you set the culture, that feedback culture, starts with you. You have to set that stage of craving it. So here's a couple things. is failure acceptable in your organization, right? Is it acceptable in your workspace? Well, how do we know? What are some ways, let's talk about how, what are some ways to know if failure is acceptable in your organization? Anybody? Say it again, sorry. Okay, yeah, so how everyone responds, how you respond as a leader or how others, yeah, when something happens. Because is everything gonna go perfect every day? No, never. Probably very few days where it all just goes well. So yeah, what happens when someone messes up? What happens when there's a lesson to be learned? Is it acceptable? It's interesting, I was listening to an interview with Caitlin Clark, right? You guys know who she is, you know, pretty up and coming, phenomenal basketball player. She was talking about how when she was a kid, she was like little kid, her older brother was learning how to, it was like the day he was gonna get the training wheels off the bike, right? And so dad takes him off and he takes off and she's like a year or two younger and hadn't been riding that long and she's like, take mine off too, you know? And the dad's like, all right. So he takes him off and she figures it out because she's determined to do it. What if her dad was like, no, I don't want you to fall, I don't, you know, and didn't take him off, there's no room for failure. Now she doesn't get that little boost of figuring it out, and maybe she doesn't become, you know, I don't know, doesn't become who she is today, right? If she had an environment growing up where failure wasn't acceptable, and so we never tried anything, you know, you never know. But that's the idea. So what about, yeah.
You're talking about allowing the space for failure to happen instead of
yes.
stepping in and stopping it.
Fixing it or stopping it or like, ooh. Because sometimes I think when we're in charge and we're talking about craving feedback and desiring it. And so the other part of that is, do you guys have, does every day go perfectly for you, right? We always talk about in the flying world, nobody's ever flown the perfect flight, right? There's always something you can learn. And so, if I, on the one hand, are like, yes, I want desire feedback because I want to get better, but then I don't ever let anybody else make a mistake, I always step in, I prevent it, I don't give them an opportunity to learn, they're probably not going to, or like you, to your point, something happens and we just crush it. Like, I can't believe you did that, you know. No one's going to bring you some feedback, right? How are you going to grow if the desire, the climate is such that we're all afraid to make a mistake because the commander might see it and he's gonna crush us for it, or he's just gonna not even let us try something new because he's afraid we might mess up. No one's gonna come and try new things, no one's gonna get better, and you're certainly not gonna learn. You're just putting out fires all day, you know, trying to make sure no one makes a mistake. So that culture starts with you, like, so here's the other question then. Do your people know that you fail? I mean, they do, right? Like, they do know you fail, but like, is that okay with you? Like, do you admit that? And do they know, so maybe the better question is, do your people know that it's okay and that you admit that you fail, right? Like, so when they see that, hey, Matt, you know, he messed up today, someone brought it to his attention and he was like, oh, you're right, and he fixed it. Now they're gonna be willing to do the same thing, right? So if you're receiving feedback and they know that you're not perfect and you're not pretending to be perfect, they know you're not perfect, but they know you're not pretending to be perfect, now they're more willing to step out, try things. And then that fosters that culture and that positive snowball effect, right? So now people are, it's okay here to mess up, have someone point that out and fix it. We're not all attacking each other, we're all growing together. Yes, and it really does start with the way that we receive that feedback. So, yeah, and often the book Multipliers talks about this in one section. The mistakes themselves are the feedback sometimes, right? That's how it works. Like, you fall off your bike, like, oh, that didn't work, let me try another way of balancing, you know? And the mistake itself is the feedback, and then they're able to get up and go. So if we are always stifling anything new because we don't want it to get messed up, people aren't learning, they're not growing, and they're certainly not coming to us with the problems because they know that they don't want to tell the boss that something didn't go quite right, you know? So invite it, So what are some ways that you can set that tone? So let's talk about that for a minute. This is a big part. How do you set the culture? What are some ways, if you're just in your shop, you don't have to be leading anything, but you are, we already talked about that. What are some ways that you can set the tone that feedback is okay?
Well, yeah, you talked about one of them, which is opening yourself up to your team and saying, here's an area where I haven't done well, or here's an area where I failed.
Yeah.
And maybe if you're not comfortable with that, even just asking the question of your teammates, I'm struggling with this, or I'm not sure how to go about this. Can you provide me with some help? Can you give me some feedback? Is this something that you've done before? You know, maybe you already have a better way of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a huge point. I think we, as a leader, you should have some key trusted agents in your life that you go to and you're like, hey, I know I struggle with what, you know, I know sometimes I just get upset for no reason, or I know that sometimes I don't listen well. I need you to tell me if I do that. If I shut someone down in a meeting, I need you to tell me. And maybe in this, you know, maybe you say, I need you to tell me right then and there so that everyone sees that I take that correction. You know, I don't know. Maybe you say, hey, if you see me doing that, please come and tell me. The first sergeant was one of the sessions you guys had. First sergeant's a great person for that. As a commander, your first sergeant can be a huge help in that area because they see how you lead, and they often have some really good insight. And they're also having to deal with all the fallout of your leadership, right? So they can be a great person. But there should be some peers. Like we up in the ops group, we, you know, when Colonel Switzer was the group commander, I was a squadron commander, Colonel Shai was another squadron commander. There were times where we would just have to sit down together and go like, hey, I need some feedback. I need some feedback on how I handled that, or I need some help from you guys on how to handle this upcoming decision we have to make.
And an important part of that is people have to know what your intentions are, right? Like, and you talked about that at the very beginning from a commander's intent standpoint, but also you have to share with your team, this is what I'm trying to do, so they can tell you whether or not you're doing that, right?
Like, yes.
Before you would stand up to give a talk, you might say, I want to communicate these three things, and this is the most important thing I want people to walk away from this talk. And then you can take your inner circle and say, did I do that?
Did that come across? Yeah.
Right?
Sometimes before you might do that, like, hey, here's you guys know, you know, we would do that sometimes. Hey, we need to get this point across to the group. Here's how I'd like to handle it. What do you get? Oh, well, I think you should say this to make sure you get that point across or whatever. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's huge. The way that you set the tone, both personally, find some people that you ask and invite into your life to give you feedback and say, hey, you have permission to come up to me anytime and tell me when you see me doing whatever. And then, you know, as a leader, that circle, there's a couple of probably circles there of influence, but you should have those close people in your life that tell you. And you know, so back to my story, and this is more credit to my daughter than me, but I think she knows overall my dad, you know, as a dad, that I do want to have good, healthy interactions with them, and we've had them before, and so she was willing to come up to me and say, hey, Dad, you kind of messed up this time, you know? I think if the trend of our relationship was that I always shut them down, I doubt she brings that to me, you know? So, but I give her more credit than myself, but I do think hopefully we're setting that tone as we lead. So then let's go on to the next one here. We'll just real quick, a couple things. So in this process of craving feedback, do you have some people in your life that you know, that are free to speak into your life? Do you go ask people afterwards, hey, how did that go? What do you think? The senior NCOs in your organization, awesome resource, right? Like always. They have so much just life experience and insight can be huge tools in that tool bag. And I hope you use them. So here's some questions you might ask yourself. How might I unintentionally be shutting people down, right? And maybe ask someone else in the room too. Ask a trusted, you know, friend, hey, what have you noticed about me? How do I shut people down? Do I not invite feedback? Do my actions mesh with what I'm saying? Or does the way I lead every day different from what I'm trying to say that I want to hear feedback, but are my actions consistent with that? Ask them. What's another question you might ask to help determine whether you are receiving feedback well? We got another one. How about how are my, someone who knows you well, you can ask them, you know, how are my, or you ask yourself, I know what I'm intending to convey here, but you might need to ask some questions to find out if what I intended to convey actually came out. Sometimes I'll, you know, after saying something, you'll go to someone again, maybe just go find a random, you know, junior person and like, hey, what did you get out of that today? You know? And then when they, if they say something totally opposite of what you were trying to convey, you're like, okay, you know, thank you. And then, all right, I got to figure something out here. So you just gave yourself some feedback, you know? And then there's similarly questions to ask those trusted agents. Hey, what can I do different? And will you tell me if I do it again? Have a few people in your life that are, you have given permission to say, hey, I saw this, you need to fix it. And you need to give permission regularly, right? Like I've figured that out. You're like, there's been a time or two where I said something or I've seen this play out. And I've been that person too, where someone told me that, hey, will you tell me? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I see, but then a few times, they've kind of shut me down a time or two, so I'm like, eh, okay. And then something else happened, and they come to me like, where were you on that one? Why didn't you say anything? And I'm like, okay, well, you, like the last three times I did, you kind of blew me off, so I quit, you know? And so that happens too. So keep inviting people to speak into your life, all right? All right, so crave the feedback. Are you humble enough to desire it? Number two, all right. Like we said before, now that you've desired it, it may come. It's going to come to you in all forms, good and bad. All right. Some of it's going to be super helpful. Some of it's going to be like, what are you even talking about? But are you approachable enough that people can bring it to you, and that you can process it? And if people start bringing you feedback, good job. You've expressed humility enough that you want it. Now, are you approachable enough that people can, when they bring it to you, they see that you're at least processing the information, right? So, you guys, anybody seen this movie, right? Monty Python. These are the French taunters, right? These guys are hiding behind this wall, right? And they're like, will you come on this quest for the Holy Grail? And he's like, I told them I already have one. And he does all this stuff, right? He farts in their general direction. All right. So, are you hiding behind these defenses in your life, right? When people bring you feedback, are you just going to stand back there and kind of be the French taunter, you know? Or are you going to actually hear it? You got to lower your defenses. Put down the defense. Listen to what they're saying, even if it's off the wall from your perspective right now. And at least give it a chance to process through your mind. So the next thing we'll... So the one point I want to make here is, the more defensive you feel in the moment, the more you need to listen, right? So if you feel that, like, the back of your neck's getting red and you're getting frustrated, that's the time, that's the trigger to your mind to go, okay, I really actually need to listen here because something just got triggered and we're going to talk about that. But in that case with my kids, like, that's where I felt. And so when my daughter started to speak, even though I was super frustrated, I'm like, I probably better hear what she has to say, you know? So thankfully, in that moment, I did lower my defenses for a moment and kind of heard what she was saying. So don't be these guys. Don't make fun of it. You know, put down the defense. Listen up. And you can decide later whether it's all true or not, right? But just at least listen. All right, so after we lower the defenses, we got to recognize the triggers, okay? There's three triggers that come up for all of us. One of the three, it could be a combination, right? You can be somewhere in this triangle. So the truth trigger, right? This is how I feel about the feedback itself, right? So that's not true. You're saying I don't listen? That's not true. I do listen. So I just shut it down and I don't, you know? As soon as that trigger is triggered, like I'm not hearing what they have to say anymore, all right? So if the truth trigger, because you are determined what they're saying is not accurate, and so you stop listening, that's the problem. Because even if it's 90% inaccurate, there's probably 10% somewhere in there that you can learn from. But at least put the defense down to listen through the trigger and process it later when you're calm, right? Number two, the relationship trigger. So the truth's how you feel about the feedback itself. The relationship trigger is how you feel about the person giving it, right? I don't need my daughter telling me how to be a dad, right? I don't need my 16-year-old son telling me how to cook sausage, all right? So I have this relationship trigger, or, you know, I don't need Airman Snuffy telling me how to lead. Like, what is it, you know, who does he think he is? Or this person that is, they complain all the time anyway. So I'm gonna blow off what they're saying because I just think that they are a complainer. Whatever the case may be, there's some relationship there that may be triggering you to not listen to what they're saying. Just be aware of that. Again, put that defense down, listen to what they're saying, process it later. All right, and then the identity trigger, and take just a couple minutes to talk about this one. So that is where you feel like this is how you feel about yourself. Like, hey, this feedback is attacking my identity, and so I disagree with it, and so I'm not listening to it anymore, okay? So we're gonna delve into that one a little bit. So that last one is probably the hardest one, because it feels like a personal attack, right? And so now, man, when we feel attacked, like we just, the human instinct, right? The fight or flight, like we go into defense mode, we're ready to like stop attacking me. So we're gonna either fight back or run away, right? That's just how it is. So that's the one we need to take just a minute to talk about. Listen for impact when the intent feels attacked. Cause that's a lot of times what happens is people, and they this is where it's super important about receiving the feedback. They may very well be in their mind attacking your intent, but you need to be mature enough to go, it doesn't matter if what they're attacking, I need to listen for the impact that it had, right? So if they're like, I just think you're a terrible leader because you don't ever listen to me, you know, or whatever the case. It sounds like they're attacking your intent, like you intend to just be a bad boss, right? And so the defense is like, no, that's not me. I know that I'm a good leader and I like to listen, you know, and so you just shut it down. But listen through that for the impact. Well, okay, what is the impact of what they're saying right now? The impact is someone got stifled because of my leadership and they're not growing right now. Okay, 80% of that may be on them, but maybe 20% is on me. Let's figure that out. Maybe 10% is on me and 10% is on their immediate supervisor. I don't know. Let me listen for the impact. Does that make sense? So listen for the impact even when it feels like they're attacking your intent. Because it's easy to go, no, that's not what I meant, right? You hear that all the time in arguments, right? That same thing with your kids, with your spouse, whatever. Like, no, that's not what I meant. Okay, doesn't matter what you meant. Listen for the impact that it had on them and figure out, okay, how do I adjust so my impact is what I wanted it to be? Maybe your intent was all good, but the impact didn't come across. That's what you need to be hearing. And then the other part about that is separate, this Craig Rochelle says this, separate the who from the do, right? Separate who you are from what you do. So a lot of times people are gonna come and they're gonna talk about what you did. Like, you said this, I didn't like it. You did this as a leader. Sometimes people get offended that we, like, you know, maybe someone got a promotion they didn't. Maybe you put someone in a role that they thought they deserved. Or maybe you didn't put someone in a role and this whole section of people thought that they deserved it because they're kind of their buddies, but you realize, like, no, that's not actually the right role for them. Now you got this whole section of your organization that feels like you're, you know, oh, you just don't like them, so you didn't put them there. Well, you're like, no, that's not who I am. I'm not a biased leader. I made this, and you can go into all the math about why this is the right decision, but that doesn't matter right now, right? So separate the who from the do, from who you are from what you do. Like, when you're receiving that feedback, oftentimes people in frustration, they will actually be attacking you. They may in their mind. But you need to have maturity to go, okay, what they're really talking about is what I did, and let me figure out if what I did could have been done different or if there was a change that could have happened. All right, so separate the who from the do. This isn't the end of the world. They're not saying you're a terrible person. Maybe they are. But that's not the truth, right? You're not a terrible person. You're a good leader. You're trying to make wise decisions. It's not always gonna be received well. So in these two roles here, when you're that identity trigger, like, that's not who I am as a leader. It's, you know, okay, what's the impact, even though they're attacking my intent? What did I do that I could have done different? Even though they might be attacking who I am, I'm not gonna let it bother me, because I know who I am, all right? Does that make sense there, the difference? Okay, so that's the process and the feedback. Are you approachable? Can people come to you and bring that feedback to you? And you find out if you're approachable if people keep coming to you, right? If they're coming to you with stuff, like, okay, good. At least I think people are willing to come bring me feedback. That's good. Now, the last part is, what do you do with that? Are you gonna do anything about it, right? And that's where you become credible, when people bring you feedback and then they see you make an adjustment. And now we've really started that positive snowball of an organization that is, feedback is good, it's accepted, it's processed, and healthy changes made, right? So, credible, this last piece here, how do you implement the change? A couple things to talk about real quick. This is huge. How you respond is usually way more important than the failure. And to be clear, I use the word failure. Just because you get feedback doesn't mean you failed, right? It doesn't mean you were wrong. It doesn't mean you messed up. But the fact that you got it is good. You're finding out what's going on out there in your organization. So you're finding out how did people receive what happened. And it may be that you stick with, hey, the decision I made was the right one, so it wasn't even necessarily a failure, but how you respond to the feedback is the most important piece, right? If we just get mad and get defensive and start explaining ourselves away, like, that's different than leading well. So how you respond is usually and almost always the most important piece. So you got three options, right? When people bring you feedback, what am I gonna do? So this is gonna be personally, but here's a good time to talk about that 360. If you ever get the opportunity and you're in a command climate and you put out a 360, and it comes back, and we did this right about the time when you took over as the group commander. We were both pretty new in squadron command roles, and we had a climate survey, and there was some helpful feedback that came out of that. And we sat down and we're like, okay, we looked through it together, kind of had to go through that processing it. Is this really true? Even if we think it's mostly not true, somehow that's the message that's getting out, so there is some things we need to adjust here. So we could hide it and go like, okay, thanks for the 360 feedback. Everybody said things were good, so good job. Keep going, like, okay. People know what they said, right? They're like, Airman Snuggy's back there like, I wrote a pretty negative one, so you're lying to me, So don't try to hide it. You could rationalize the way. You could get them and be like, well, now, a lot of you talked about how, you feel like communication's not really good in here. But, I think that's because some of you are part-time and you're not able to check your government emails every week. And we do send out texts every week. And we do, like, dude, right? They all stop listening, right? Just own it, right? Okay, hey, we heard that. I'm sharing with you what the feedback was. Here's what we heard from you guys. And I appreciate the feedback. Here's what we're gonna try to do now to fix it. So when you share it, you share the feedback, and then you share the fix, right? And now you invite the next round of feedback, because you go, hey, here's what we wanna do to fix it, and I need you guys to tell us if this fix is working, right? And it snowballs positively now. And so like, hey, we appreciate that you're trying to fix it. This is a good adjustment, but we still think you're missing here, and now we get this ongoing conversation, right? And that can happen again at the organizational level or just on the one-on-one level. If you have that trusted agent, and the first sergeant's like, hey, you got some areas to work on in your leadership here. Here's an issue that I keep getting feedback from the troops about. And you're like, oh, okay, thank you. What do I need to do? Work that out. Okay, here, share it with them. Here's what I'm going to try to do. And if you see me not doing that, back to what we talked about before, I need you to tell me. All right, so implement the change. When you implement it, you can hide it, rationalize it, or you can, hey, this is what we heard, this is what we're gonna do to fix it, and please let me know if that's working or if you still see some areas we need to work on. So hide it, rationalize it, or share it. And then here's a huge part, this is kind of how we're gonna end. Implement that change. It cannot be an external image change, right? If you're like, all right, we heard from the group that you feel like the leadership is showing favoritism towards this one group. So you're like, okay, all right. So we get together, like, that's not true. Is that true? No, it's not true. Okay, so here's what we're gonna do. we're going to take some random, you know, external action that we're going to show them. Or let's say it's listening. Like, oh, you don't listen well. Okay. So I'm going to, every time someone is talking, I'm going to ask a follow-up question. So they'll know that I'm listening. Look, people can see through that stuff, right? If you haven't changed on the inside, and one of the books, I can't remember which one now, talks about this. There was one leader, pretty high up executive leader in an organization, had a 360, you know, and got this feedback that she was too micromanaging, right? And she's like, I'm not a micromanager. So she kind of blew it off. And the next year, she got the same feedback. So she's like, what in the world? So the next year, she still didn't feel like she needed to change, but she's like, okay, I'm good. All right, I need to show people that I'm changing because they're clearly not seeing that I'm really not a micromanager. So she adjusted some patterns in the way that she sent out some communication and things. And the next year she got the same one. And so finally the consultant that was working with her was like, look, do you think you're a micromanager? She's like, no, like there's your problem. 3 years in a row people are telling you are, you still haven't. She's like, well, I changed this and that. He's like, yeah, but you haven't changed on the inside. Like, until you change on the inside, that will change naturally then how you live out your life, right? So once you've identified an issue, and again, not all feedback is accurate. Some of it's just wrong. But you at least need to process it, and there's probably something there that you need to change. Once you decide you need to change, make it internal, right? Don't just try to appease people by changing some external behavior, or I'm gonna try to look more like I listen more, or whatever the case is. Like, own it. Decide on the inside, like, I need to change this area. And that will flow out much more naturally then, and people will see that and appreciate that, because they can tell, right? So, we'll get here. Last thing. One little acronym I find helpful. When you get some feedback, sit down. Again, this can be whether you do a 360 or you just personally you get some feedback. Hey, what did I do well? What can I improve? And what am I going to do next time? Right? Win. Super easy. Hey, I got this feedback. I think I hear what they're saying. Like, at least I did this part well. I'm going to take that as a win. But there is this thing I can fix. So I'm going to work on that. I'm gonna improve that. How am I gonna improve that? I'm gonna do this specific thing different next time. And you just do that, if you do that every day, you kind of get the end of your day and hit that little thing real quick. There's a great book called Atomic Habits, right? You guys ever read that book? The whole point is atomic, not like the bomb, but like the atom, right? It's the smallest thing in the world, in the universe. When you make these micro atomic level changes, a bunch of them over time turns out to be a huge change. And it's a great book, read it sometime, but that's the whole idea. Hey, what's the 1% change I can make, right? What's 1% growth we can do here? What did I do well? Let's celebrate that. What can I do different? How am I gonna make it next time different? So implement that change. So just to, you know, highlight, do you crave feedback? Do people know that you want to receive it? Are you humble enough to look for it? Are you approachable enough that people can bring it to you so that you can then process it? And as you process it, you're gonna weed some of it out. It's not all true, but something's true in there. Process it, figure out what's true. Look for those triggers, like, hey, just because it's the person I don't like is giving it to me, it's something they're saying still might be true. Maybe they really do have it out for you, I don't know. But maybe they don't either, but something's true in there. Process it, and then implement a change. Let people know what you're doing. Let them know that you heard the feedback and that you're gonna make this change. And then go with it. And it starts a positive effect that can have a huge difference over time. So here you go. Feedback will find you one way or another, right? We live in a world where feedback is there, right? Every day. On the way here, I saw someone get pulled over. They got some feedback, right? But you know what? The rest of us all got some feedback too, because we all slow down, right? Like, there's feedback out there. It's gonna come. Is it going to be a superpower and you're going to grow from it, or is it going to be a kryptonite? And because if you don't receive it well, it'll tank your career and or your personal life. So my story, right? Thankfully, it ended good. You know, we're still on good terms with my kids. I'm thankful my daughter was had enough insight to say something. Thankful my wife reinforced what she said. And I'm thankful that, and then, you know, eventually I was able to process it. Some of the stuff I said to my son was true, and I reinforced that with him, but I also said, hey, man, I shouldn't have said it that way. You know, that was dumb. I'm sorry. And so he and I are good, you know? So there's a, it's out there. Every day we live in a world of feedback. How you handle it really is going to change your life, whether here in your career, out there in life, or both. So I hope that's helpful. Anything you want to...
Yeah, awesome. Up. First of all, thanks again for joining us today. A couple things that before we've got some time for some Q&A yeah. that I wanted to talk about. We'll make the slides available. We'll get that out via distro, and then we'll probably provide or will provide some opportunities or options out there to solicit 360-degree feedback. So you should see that come out very soon. Did want to talk a little bit about where are our options for that feedback right now within our organization and how we do things right now? Okay, that's a question. Where are some areas where we already have mechanisms in place formally to receive feedback from our airmen, from our teammates? Yeah, so standard feedback sessions, right? The DOCS, we're gonna talk about that here in just a second. So anytime you're sitting down with an airman for a midterm feedback, the career motivation program, the CMP interviews we do with enlisted airmen, those are all there. The Air Force and the DOD at large have moved towards an annual force-wide climate assessment, which, you know, we often call the DOCS. So that's one. It happens every fall, and now they're aligned across the DOD. So every unit is going to get their force-wide climate assessment, and then there's subsequent plans and review things that you're mandated as a commander to go through and do all that, and that's some of the stuff that Matt was talking about in terms of what we dealt with as a team up in the ops group. So there's a lot of those formal things there. We through our airman development plan, right, that we're doing every other year now in terms of those actual feedback sessions. And some units are continuing just to do them annually. There's opportunities there. What I would challenge you to do, and I think Matt gave some great examples, is identifying those areas where they're kind of non-traditional. They're not structured in what we do, but there's tons of feedback out there, right? There's feedback in the way that we're communicating to you right now and how you're receiving the information. Yeah. Just by, you know, how you guys are, what you look like in this room and how you're responding and all that kind of stuff. So I would encourage you to kind of work on some of those interpersonal communication type skills. Another thing that he talked about that I think is super important in terms of the triggers is that idea of being dismissive. So you have this individual that you see as potentially the person that's always complaining, or maybe it's a group of people. Mm-hmm. That are always complaining. But there are going to be nuggets of truth in there. And that's one of your jobs as a leader, right, is to be receptive to that and be able to pull those bits out, right, and not shutting down the individual. I'll tell you a real quick personal story on that regard. So in my first command as a squadron commander here, I had a senior enlisted member come to me, and I always thought that I was great at giving these one-on-one feedback sessions, you know, that they would go really well. And he didn't come to me to tell me that I wasn't great at it, but he came to give me some feedback about how I was doing them, right? Because his airmen were coming to him. And this is an individual that I did not want to receive feedback from. I just fundamentally, he and I were on different ends of the spectrum in terms of how we saw the way things should be happening within our squadron. And it took a lot for me to have to listen to what he had to say to me. I probably didn't do as well as I should have, but I will tell you that the feedback he gave me fundamentally changed the way I met one-on-one with airmen. He said, I think you should do this. You should begin your feedback session with this, and you should end it with this. And I had never thought about it, right? And ordinarily, I would have dismissed this individual just because
our personalities conflicted. We were completely different individuals. But I will tell you that feedback, just because I was open for that window right there, it changed the way I interacted with airmen. I've shared that story with a number of officers and commanders. I'm happy to give you guys the more specific details on how, you know, I've worked through those feedback sessions. But it can come from anywhere. And if you're too quick to just shut somebody off, then you're not going to get it, right? There was one other point I wanted to highlight from the talk. So much good stuff in there. But it's this idea of failure. And do you have a culture where failure is acceptable, and how you treat that failure and what you do with it, how you learn from it? It's something that everybody needs to think about. We tend to be a very compliance-oriented organization from our MAJCOM on down. Just think about it. You know, MCT, IGEMS, inspections, all this stuff. AMC, all the way down to the unit level, is a very compliance-focused organization. There's a lot of good to that. The part that might be bad about that part of our culture is that we feel like there's never a chance, or there shouldn't be a time where we're not compliant or we don't do something right, right? And if you step in too soon, you miss the opportunity for learning. Now, that's not to say that we're going to allow somebody to do something that's going to cause harm to an individual, put metal on metal or metal on terrain, as we say in the flying community. It just means, as a leader, you understand how far can I let this individual go, because the failure is important, right? And how we take that information and then we turn it into something good. That WIN acronym is awesome. You know, what didn't I do well today? Why didn't it go well? And next time I'm going to do this, right? Or in this case, what did we do well? I want to double down on that, right? So I do appreciate, Matt, you taking the time. I'd like to give you guys some time if you want to ask some questions as we kind of wrap this up. Isaiah, go ahead.
Sir, in your story, what was the change that you made to your individual feedback?
So he said, anytime you sit down with an enlisted airman to give them feedback, you should pull out the little brown book. As a matter of fact, he said you should start with that before you even think about giving feedback to an enlisted airman, positive or negative. And look at the enlisted force structure, what the responsibilities of each tier of the enlisted force, what's detailed in that, you know, so junior airmen, NCOs, senior NCOs, the specific roles. It really changed the way I thought about not just the feedback process, but more importantly, what are our expectations for our airmen, right? The Air Force, this is the beauty of the Air Force.
Yeah.
There's a regulation for everything, right? But that's one of the great ones. So it tells us right there in that book, here's what is expected of an NCO. And so I can look at that and go, not just, oh, here's what I'm gonna call you out on. No, it's a way of communicating expectations to an individual. And, you know, if you're not doing that necessarily as a supervisor or within the NCO ranks and looking at that regularly, it's just a missed opportunity, right? And it's working. It's been there. It's one of those standards that we have that works well for us in the Air Force.
It's funny because I remember you telling me that when I first became a squadron commander, which I don't even remember that, but so that person who gave you that technique, which you didn't really want to hear that from them, it started actually a positive snowball that you went at, you still learned from it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you figured out, actually, this is pretty helpful. Pass it on to me. I always used it, and I found it to be very helpful because it took away any layer of like, you just have this unrealistic expectation as the commander. Like, no, this is what the Air Force expects from your role right now. And it was a great way to just go, hey, here's what they expect. Like, how do you feel? You feel like you're there, you know? Yes. Like, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, I think I agree with you. Here's maybe one thing. Or, you know, or no. Like, oh, well, it's not me. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm just saying you don't meet the standard right now that the Air Force would like you to be at your current rank. So let's figure out how to get there, right? And it was a super helpful technique that I didn't have.
Yeah.
And so it came because you were willing to take feedback. And then it developed a positive snowball. So, yeah.
Yeah, when you talk about that and the triggers, like,
how do I feel about the truth that's being told to me right now or the individual?
Yeah.
Well, those kind of techniques help you remove that barrier, yeah. right? Like they yeah. help you focus on the what and not the who, right?
Yeah.
Or the as you put it, what you're doing versus who you are, which is a significant barrier to either receiving or providing feedback yeah. to somebody, because sometimes we just take it so personally.
Yeah.
It, you know, we want to do well.
Yeah.
And when we get that feedback, it feels like, well, now you're coming after me as an individual. And that's not really what's happening.
Yeah, and that's because that exact triangle, every time, if you're in a leadership role, every time you walk out of your office, everybody around you is going through that triangle, right? Because they're like, everything you say, they're processing through like, okay, he's the boss, so I have this relationship thing, like, okay, I have to listen to him, but maybe I don't like him as a boss, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, they're having to go through that, or I feel like he doesn't like me as an airman, so if you can remove some of those layers for them, some of those barriers, some of those triggers, that's helpful to now you doing what you want to do, which is to help provide helpful feedback, because you want to see them grow, right? That's like, I want to see them grow. Man, I love being able to come here today because I love this organization, because it was an awesome place for me to come and finish up my military career, and I love the people here and the organization made up of the people here. And so I wanted to leave it. When I left, I wanted it to be in a better place than when I got here, right? And so if you're able to make some of those incremental changes, small, every day, and you leave an environment behind you, either whether you just leave, retire, or just move across the street to the next role, now the organization that's left behind you is in a positive place, and it's good. It's funny, you talk about the being able to make fail. And when I remember in pilot training, there was this one instructor, the dude, I hated flying with him because he would only do anything. If you got 1 inch out of position, he would take the airplane back, you know, like trying to learn how to fly formation. And you know, you get in there, you slide in there like, all right, your airplane. And then you're like, this slow bounce happens and you end up out here and then you get it. And if you got 1 inch out, he's like, ah, my airplane. And he'd put it back, like, stay there. Versus the guys I like to fly with were like, they'd just be back there laughing at you, you know, while you're like, he's like, hey man, try this. Like, don't squeeze the stick so tight. Try to use just these two fingers. And then you'd be like, oh, cool. And he'd let me figure it out, right? Like that. And so I always stuck that with me in my techniques of like, what? Hey, let people, I'm not gonna let you hit the other airplane. And I'll tell you that up front. Like, look, I'm not gonna let you fall on your face. But short of that, I'm gonna let you make some failures.
Yeah.
But people only believe that if they've seen that you have made failures and been public about it,
yeah.
right? And that goes back into then receiving feedback, and that they've seen that you've taken feedback and made changes and accepted it and then moved on. And they're like, okay, yeah, he's open to feedback, like, and he's okay with failing publicly. So I'll try something, I'll try to learn. And it'll be okay. I'm not afraid of getting yelled at, you know? So.
Some of the best feedback I received from our team and ops was after I stood up in front of people and let them know how I screwed up, right? Whether that was in flying or in a process mm-hmm. or in our leadership or how we were doing things, but literally standing in front of the group or whatever audience was there and saying, I got to tell you all about how I screwed this up the other day. And then we'd kind of go through it in a debrief format. And then I would talk to the next time I'm presented with this situation, I'm going to do this, right? Questions you can ask in the moment. How's this working out for you, right? Like we would ask that a lot of times in the airplane is just asking them, you know, for kind of that, where do you see yourself right now? You know, and how we're doing this. Do you think this is working? Is it getting you to where you want to be? If not, you know, maybe we need a little bump steer or a little redirection in order to get us where we need to be. Anybody else have questions? Well, thank you guys for taking the time out to be here today. Thank you again, Matt, for closing out this session of the Leading Edge. I think this is probably the best way to close out this portion of the series. Look forward to getting you back up here in some other capacity or the next time we get this program going, because we're grateful for your service and your willingness to give back to us. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. For more information about the 130th Airlift Wing, you can find us online at www.130aw.ang.af.mil. If you have questions about this program or the 130th, you can contact us by email at 130.aw.public.affairs@us.af.mil.